This podcast is the property of
the Half-Blood Princesses.
I'm Demi.
I'm Jess.
The story will begin in a flourish.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 6, part 2. In our last episode, we talked about the beginning of the Chamber of Secrets, and we ended with Hagrid telling the boys to follow the spiders.
So after Hagrid's very confusing comment about following spiders, Harry and Ron keep looking out for them, but they don't see any spiders until one day in Herbology. Harry sees spiders scuttling in a straight line, as if they're going to a prearranged meeting. If they follow their fixed course, it's clear where they end up, the Forbidden Forest. Harry tells this to Ron, and obviously Ron's not happy about this at all. And as they leave Herbology and they're going to Defense Against the Dark Arts, Harry comes up with a plan. That night, they'll use his father's invisibility cloak to go into the Forbidden Forest, and they'll also take Fang, because he's been in there before, and might offer some help. Ron goes off about there being werewolves in the forest, and Harry says that there's good things in the forest too, like unicorns and centaurs. But Harry isn't stoked either. How would you feel if you knew you had to go into the Forbidden Forest to follow spiders and not know exactly what you'll find when you go in there?
I'd be like Ron. I wouldn't want to go in at all because spiders are small and creepy and they like scuttle around and it's dark outside and there's trees and also the coverage, I don't know if people would hear me scream.
Yeah, exactly. And you said spiders are small and creepy. We're about to meet not-so-small spiders.
That was perfect.
I know. Segway. That night after midnight, Harry and Ron put on the invisibility cloak and head out for Hagrid's hut. They get Fang, and Harry leaves the invisibility cloak inside because they won't need it in the forest. Ron's still hopeful that they won't see spiders and won't have to follow them in. And when they go back outside, Harry lights his wand by saying Lumos. And Ron has one of my favorite lines. Good thinking. I light mine too, but, you know, it'd probably blow up or something. Which, I feel so bad for Ron here. He's in the worst possible situation. First, he's scared to go into the forest for the first time. He's afraid of spiders, and also because he broke his wand from the whole Romping Willow thing, he can't even defend himself without the risk of something completely going wrong.
I agree. I wouldn't want to go into the forest because of the spiders and because I couldn't defend myself. I'd literally be clinging to Harry the whole time and being like, protect me, protect me.
Unfortunately for Ron, Harry's wand illuminates two spiders, and they have no choice but to follow them. They grab Fang, and into the forest they go for their terrifying journey. For 20 minutes, they walk, and there's no sounds other than the crunching leaves and twigs and basically all your creepy foresty sounds. They continue walking, and the trees get thicker than ever. Harry remembers back to his first trip into the forest, his first year, where Hagrid said not to leave the trail and go too deep into the forest, but again, they don't really have a choice. The forest is so dense that Harry has to consistently bend down to shine his wand light to keep track of the spiders because it's so dark he can't see anything beyond his sphere of light. How freaking terrifying. I'd turn around and go back. Like, screw the whole spiders thing. I'd be out of here.
I would too. That's probably why I wouldn't be the protagonist.
They walk for about a half hour, and the ground starts to slope down. And then, out of legit nowhere, Fang barks, which obviously scares the crap out of Harry and Ron. They hear something big moving, and then they hear the sounds of snapping twigs and branches as it gets closer. Oh, no, said Ron. Oh, no, oh. Shut up, said Harry frantically. It'll hear you. Hear me, said Ron in an unnaturally high voice. It's already heard Fang. The darkness seemed to be pressing on their eyeballs as they stood, terrified, waiting. There was a strange rumbling noise and then silence. What do you think it's doing? Said Harry. Probably getting ready to pounce, said Ron. I love this interaction. It's so pure. The anticipation reaches a breaking point, and then there's blazing light, and it's revealed that Mr. Weasley's flying car was what was making the sound, and it's been chilling out in the forest all along.
It is a wild car. Cars are man-made, but this is a wild car. How ironic is that?
It's so cool, and Harry and Ron are relieved. But their relief is short-lived because two huge, hairy creatures pick them up and Fang too and carry them deeper into the forest. They reach a hollow and the sight is absolutely terrifying. Spiders, not tiny spiders like those surging over the leaves below. Spiders the size of cart horses, eight-eyed, eight-legged, black, hairy, gigantic. The massive specimen that was carrying Harry made its way down the steep slope toward a misty domed web in the very center of the hollow, while its fellows closed in all around it, clicking their pincers excitedly at the sight of its load. The spiders drop Harry, Ron, and Fang, and as if this isn't bad enough to be stuck in this hollow with all these huge creepy spiders, the one that was carrying Harry starts to talk, and it says, "Aragog." At this point, I'd be like, what the actual hell? These things can talk too? Are you kidding me? And then enter Aragog. And from the middle of the misty domed web, a spider the size of a small elephant emerged very slowly. There was gray in the black of his body and legs, and each of the eyes on his ugly, pincered head was milky white. He was blind. Terrifying sight.
Yeah, Aragog is a really creepy name. But it also reminds me of someone old and wise. So he's gray, so he's old, and he must be wise.
Aragog asked what's going on, and the spider that was carrying Harry said, "Men." Aragog asked if it's Hagrid, and the one that was carrying Ron said, "Strangers." And Aragog just says, "Kill them." Harry realizes that he's in a very bad situation and has a chat with Aragog. He tells Aragog that he's friends with Hagrid and that Hagrid's in trouble. The people up at the school think that he's been attacking students. Aragog tells him about the story about this happening a long time ago and that how the people up at Hogwarts believe that Aragog was a monster from the Chamber of Secrets. He explained that he comes from a distant land and he was given to Hagrid by a traveler when he was only an egg. Hagrid cared for him, and when the people at the school started accusing Aragog of killing a girl, Hagrid protected him by bringing him into the Forbidden Forest. Aragog says that he's never harmed a human in respect for Hagrid and that he's never seen any of the castle except for the cover in which he grew up.
That's kind of a cute story.
Yeah, it is really cute. Like, I can see how Hagrid kind of cared for Aragog. And so then Harry asks him, like, does he know what the monster is or anything, because the attacks are happening again. "The thing that lives in the castle," said Aragog, "is an ancient creature we spiders fear above all others. Well do I remember pleading with Hagrid to let me go when I sensed the beast moving about the school." Harry asks what it is, which is a very bad idea because the spiders start clicking their pincers and moving in closer because they're not happy, and neither is Aragog. "We do not speak of it," said Aragog fiercely. "We do not name it. I never even told Hagrid the name of that dread creature, though he asked me many times." Harry senses its conversation is over and says they're gonna go now, but Aragog has other plans, saying that he can't deny his sons and daughters fresh meat when it comes so willingly into their midst. Luckily, Mr. Weasley's flying car saves the day and gets them the hell out of the forest. Harry goes into Hagrid's hut, Fang runs into his basket, and he's trembling under his blanket, poor thing. When Harry grabs the invisibility cloak and goes back outside, Ron is throwing up, which is completely bad, and asks Harry what they even found out. Harry explains that Hagrid is innocent and that he didn't open the chamber and that Aragog wasn't the monster that attacked the girl. Ron doesn't consider this innocent because he literally kept Aragog as a pet. Back up in the Gryffindor common room, Harry is just about to go to bed when a thought strikes him. He sits up and explains to Ron that Aragog mentioned that the girl who got killed died in a bathroom, and then they realize it's Moaning Myrtle.
I love this part because it's a literal trail. He follows the trail of spiders, he learns something, and then the trail leads to Myrtle. So episode 6 part 1 was all about the things that were going on, and now they're finally getting closer to solving the mystery. Plus, if you think about it, Aragog probably saved Hagrid's life by telling him to get away from that monster, because Hagrid likes monsters. He'd probably go up to it and be like, hey, how you doing? And then get petrified. So Aragog probably saved his life. Plus, it's so cute. He grew up in like a little cupboard and he was set free.
Yeah, and I love how Aragog even stopped to talk to Harry out of respect to Hagrid. Like, yes, he basically said at the end that his kids can eat all of them and not let Harry, Ron, and Fang go. But he actually told Harry about the chamber, which is nice out of respect for Hagrid. Again, because Hagrid was accused and Aragog's like, listen, this guy raised me. He's nice. I didn't do anything. So he's consistently backing up Hagrid, though he's a monster. There's something interestingly good in that.
I agree. Hagrid may not be the prettiest person or the most liked because he's half giant, but he has the biggest heart, and you see that here.
I also think it's interesting here that Harry notes that the monster that Aragog talked about is almost like a monster Voldemort because Aragog wouldn't speak its name, which is really ironic because we soon find out that Voldemort is the one who can control the monster.
That's interesting. I didn't think of that.
3 days before exams are going to start, Professor McGonagall gives everybody good news at breakfast. Professor Sprout told her that the mandrakes are ready for cutting, and that night they'll be able to revive all who have been petrified. At this point, Ginny comes over, and she's super stressed out, and she's twisting her hands in her lap, and she clearly has something to say. Ron asks her what's up, and Ginny's looking up and down the Gryffindor table, clearly freaked out. Harry and Ron both prompt her some more, and she looks as though she's going to speak, but then she can't. Harry asks her if it has anything to do with the Chamber of Secrets. Does she know something? Or has she seen anyone acting oddly? Ginny's about to speak when ridiculous Percy comes over, kicks her out of her seat, and says he's starving. Ron tells Percy off because Ginny was going to tell them something, and Percy gets all anxious and says that it had nothing to do with the Chamber of Secrets. And we find out at the end of the book that what he's referring to is when Ginny walked in on him and Penelope Clearwater making out. But I hate Percy here because Ginny was going to tell them something about the Chamber of Secrets, and Percy thinks everything's about him all the time.
Perfect Percy.
Perfect Percy.
He's so annoying. I don't like Percy at all.
Me neither. Later, when Loser Lockhart is taking Harry and Ron to History of Magic.
Loser Lockhart. Somebody make some buttons.
When he's taking them to History of Magic, he's going off about the whole Chamber of Secrets thing, and he's saying that when the poor petrified people wake up, the first thing out of their mouths will be, it was Hagrid. And then he goes off about he can't believe how McGonagall is still ensuring that all these security measures are in place because clearly they're unnecessary. To Ron's surprise, Harry agrees, which Harry does for a reason, but Ron can't figure that out yet. Lockhart goes on saying that the teachers have enough to do without having to walk students to class and stand guard all night. Ron catches on to what Harry's trying to do and agrees too, and says that Lockhart should just leave them where they are because they only have one more corridor to go until History of Magic. Lockhart thinks this is the best idea ever and says he's going to go get ready for his next lesson. And Ron says, gone to curl his hair, more like.
I can just see him in his office with, like, a curling iron and his, like, portraits doing the same thing, too. Oh my god, that's so creepy. And also, he carries those portraits with him, too. Like, does he forget what he looks like?
I don't know. He's so full of himself. It's ridiculous. But Harry and Ron take this moment of freedom to get to Moaning Myrtle's bathroom, but their plan to speak to her doesn't work out because Professor McGonagall turns up.
Potter! Weasley! What are you doing?
It was Professor McGonagall, and her mouth was the thinnest of thin lines. We were,
Ron stammered. We were going to go and see.
Hermione, said Harry. Ron and Professor McGonagall both looked at him.
We haven't seen her for ages, Professor, Harry went on hurriedly, treading on Ron's foot. And we thought we'd sneak into the hospital wing, you know. and tell her the mandrakes are nearly ready and, not to worry. Harry and Ron think they're going to get scolded and punished, but McGonagall gets teary-eyed and tells them that they can go see Hermione. When they get to the hospital wing, Harry sees a ball of paper clutched in Hermione's fist. It takes a few minutes, but Harry twists and turns until he pulls it free, and he realizes that it's a page out of a textbook, a very old textbook. And this is what the page says. Of the many fearsome beasts and monsters that roam our lands, there is none more curious or more deadly than the basilisk, known also as the King of Serpents. This snake, which may reach gigantic size and live many hundreds of years, is born from a chicken's egg, hatched beneath a toad. Its methods of killing are most wondrous, for aside from its deadly and venomous fangs, the basilisk has a murderous stare, and all who are fixed with the beam of its eyes shall suffer instant death. Spiders flee before the basilisk, for it is their mortal enemy. And the basilisk flees only from the crowing of the rooster, which is fatal to it. Under this passage, Hermione had written one word, pipes.
So no one touched the paper that was in her hand, which I find really interesting. Secondly, the basilisk is a chicken's egg, and it can be killed by a rooster. That's really ironic.
Oh yeah, I didn't think of that. That's really cool.
And also, a toad is a reptile, and so is a snake, so that's kind of cool.
Oh yeah, it's really cool too. So the pieces start to snap into place here. Harry realizes that the basilisk is what is in the Chamber of Secrets, and why he can understand it. He can understand Parseltongue and speak it, therefore that is why he heard the snake moving about the castle. And we know now from Hermione that it's been using the plumbing. We also learn here that nobody died because nobody looked into the basilisk's eyes directly. Colin saw it through his camera, Justin saw it through nearly headless Nick, and Nick couldn't die again because he's already dead. Penelope and Hermione saw it in the reflection of the mirror, and Mrs. Norris saw it in the reflection of the water from the flood from Moaning Myrtle's bathroom. We also learn here that Aragog was speaking of the basilisk because the spiders flee before it, and also because the roosters have been dying. They have been killed because we learn that the crowing of the rooster is fatal to the basilisk. Another piece snaps into place here because Harry and Ron realize that one of the entrants to the chamber is in Moaning Myrtle's bathroom. They rush down to the staff room to tell Professor McGonagall, but instead of the bell signaling the end of the lesson, they hear her say for everybody to report back to their dormitories immediately and for the teachers to go to the staff room. Harry and Ron hide in a wardrobe to listen. McGonagall tells the assembled teachers that a student has been taken into the chamber itself. Professor Flitwick lets out a squeak. Professor Sprout covers her face, and Snape grips the back of a chair and asks how she knows this. Professor McGonagall says that another message had been left by the heir of Slytherin. Her skeleton will lie in the chamber forever. Professor Flitwick bursts into tears, and Madame Hooch asks who. And we learn that it's Ginny Weasley. At this moment, Professor Lockhart, the idiot, barges into the staff room and is like, what did I miss? And Snape fills him in and basically says that this is his great moment he's been waiting for. And then all the teachers gang up on him. Professor Sprout pipes up and says that he was saying that he knows where the entrance of the chamber is. Professor Flitwick joins in next and says that Lockhart told him who was inside it. Snape's up next and tells Lockhart that he remembers him saying that he wishes he could have had a crack at the monster before they took Hagrid away. Lockhart starts to splutter, basically saying Snape must have been mistaken, but McGonagall puts a stop to this, saying that Lockhart has his free reign at last, and he better do it now, and the teachers will make sure nobody's in his way. When none of the teachers come to Lockhart's defense, he slumps out of the staff room, and now the moment has come. It's time to go to the Chamber of Secrets.
I feel bad for Ron because they come into the staff room hoping to get help and then they find out that his sister is in the chamber. Like, I would be so scared if that was my little sister and I couldn't do anything. So that's really terrifying. But it's also funny that the teachers gang up on Lockhart because he keeps saying how awesome and great he is. Well, now here's the chance for him to prove it, which obviously he doesn't. That night in the common room, Harry and Ron sit with the twins. Percy sends an owl to their parents and shuts himself in his dormitory. Unable to bear the quiet any longer, the twins go up to bed around sunset. Ron finally speaks. He says that Ginny knew something about the chamber, which was why she was taken. That had to be the reason. She was pure blood after all. He asks Harry if there's any chance Ginny isn't dead. And when Harry can't find the words to say to comfort Ron, Ron continues, saying that they need to tell Lockhart what they know, since he will be going into the chamber. No one stops them as they leave. When they approach his office, they hear scraping, thumping, and footsteps. Even weirder, when Harry knocks, it goes quiet. Lockhart's eye appears at the door. Harry tells him they have information for him, and he reluctantly lets them in to his office. Lockhart is in the process of packing up his things, and still packs as he talks to them. Harry asks if he's going somewhere, and Lockhart says yes. There was an urgent call, but really, he's running away, scared. Harry says, "After all that stuff you did in your books?" "Books can be misleading," said Lockhart delicately. "You wrote them!" Harry shouted. "My dear boy," said Lockhart, straightening up and frowning at Harry, "do use your common sense. My books wouldn't have sold half as well if people didn't think I'd done all those things." He continues to say that the people who did those things were ugly and would look terrible on the front covers of books. Harry says that Lockhart has been taking credit for things people have done, and Lockhart says that it's not that simple. He finds the people who did these things, interviews them about it, and then wipes their memories clean so they don't remember doing those things. You want fame, you have to be prepared for a long, hard slog. How terrible is that?
That's a literal fraud, and it makes me so mad because he's so judgmental. Like, these wizards and witches who did these things are obviously skilled and amazing and intelligent, and he doesn't think they deserve credit just because they're ugly and wouldn't look good on the cover of a book.
Yeah, exactly, and obliviating people with the memory charm is a crime. He hasn't got caught because these people don't remember him obliviating them. So he's a literal felon.
Yep. What goes around comes around, as we'll see.
Speaking of the memory charm, before he leaves, Lockhart says that he's going to have to wipe their memories now so they don't tell people what they know about him. Before he can do any damage, Harry disarms him. Lockhart flew over his trunk. It's so funny, it's like a cartoon. Lockhart's wand flew in the air too. Ron caught it and tossed it out the window. It's gone. The wand is gone. He's totally helpless. Harry kicks Lockhart's trunk aside and points his wand at Lockhart. Lockhart asks Harry what he wants him to do, since he knows nothing about where the chamber is. "You're in luck," said Harry, forcing Lockhart to his feet at one point. "We think we know where it is, and what's inside it. Let's go." This is hilarious! This is absolutely hilarious!
I love how a 12-year-old is literally holding a professor at one point and being like, "Move it, you're doing this, you got no choice, come on."
They march out of the office and into Myrtle's bathroom. Myrtle is sitting on the tank of the end toilet, and Harry asks her how she died. Myrtle looks flattered. Why would you be flattered when someone asks you how you died?
I don't know. She's a wacko, too.
She said she died in the stall she is in currently. I'd hidden because Olive Hornby was teasing me about my glasses. The door was locked, and I was crying, and then I heard somebody come in. They said something funny. A different language, I think it must have been. Anyway, what really got me was that it was a boy speaking. So I unlocked the door to tell him to go and use his own toilet, and then... Myrtle swelled importantly, her face shining. I died. Harry asks how, and she says she doesn't know. She saw a pair of great big yellow eyes. Her body seized up, and she floated away and came back again, determined to haunt the girl who made fun of her. Harry asks her where she saw the eyes, and she points to the sink across from her stall. Harry and Ron go to examine the sink, and Harry sees a tiny snake on the side of one of the copper taps. Myrtle informs them that the tap doesn't work, and Ron has the idea to have Harry tell it to open up in Parseltongue. Harry manages to do this only after imagining that he's speaking to a real snake. A strange hissing had escaped from him, and at once the tap glowed with a brilliant white light and began to spin. Next second, the sink began to move. The sink, in fact, sank right out of sight, leaving a large pipe exposed, a pipe wide enough for a man to slide into. How creepy is this? This is super creepy. He just speaks, and the sink opens. And he's like, oh, a pipe.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool that to speak Parseltongue, you don't actually have to be speaking to a real snake. He was just speaking to the engraved snake or whatever on the sink. So I think it's cool how just looking at a snake and imagining it to be real allows him to speak Parseltongue.
Exactly. The boys both say they're going down there, and Lockhart, Wussy Lockhart, tries to leave. They both point their wands at him as he had his hand on the doorknob. Ron tells him he can go first, and when Lockhart protests, Harry jabs him in the back with his wand, and after he gets his legs in, Ron pushes him down. This is hilarious. They're like, oh, you suck, so you're going first.
I think it's really funny how these two 12-year-olds are basically bossing him around, and Lockhart is like a scared little kid here because he has no defenses, and he doesn't have a wand, and these two kids are like, you're on first. You're in first, go down. This is how it's gonna go.
Yeah, and if he's a defense against the dark arts teacher, he should at least know hand-to-hand combat, but he doesn't, which is even funnier.
I know.
So Harry goes in the pipe next. It was like rushing down an endless, slimy, dark slide. He could see more pipes branching off in all directions, but none as large as theirs, which twisted and turned, sloping steeply downward. And he knew that he was falling deeper below the school than even the dungeons. Then the pipe leveled out, and he landed on the damp floor of a dark stone tunnel large enough to stand in. Harry and Ron speculate how far down they are, and Ron says they must be under the lake. Harry lights his wand, and the three start to move. Harry reminds them to close their eyes at the first sign of movement. They see animal bones on the ground, and as they round the corner, they see an outline of something lying on the tunnel floor. Luckily, it's a green, 20-foot-long snakeskin. Lockhart's knees give out. Ron points his wand at him and tells him to get up. Lockhart gets up and dives at Ron, knocking him to the ground. Lockhart gets up, smiling, with Ron's wand in his hand. "The adventure ends here, boys," he said. "I shall take a bit of this skin back up to the school. Tell them I was too late to save the girl, and that you two tragically lost your minds at the sight of her mangled body. Say goodbye to your memories." He raises the wand high over his head and yells, "Obliviate!" The wand goes off like a bomb, and Harry runs away from the chunks of falling tunnel ceiling. Harry is now in front of a rock wall with Ron and Lockhart, who got hit by his own spell, behind it. Not wanting to risk the tunnel caving in if they used magic, Harry and Ron agree that Harry will go on, and Ron will try and shift the rock so Harry can get through when he comes back. So let's talk about how stupid a move that was on Lockhart's behalf, because he uses a broken wand and then they get trapped, and also he's like super mean. He's like, I'm just gonna leave you down here to die, and I'm gonna take this skin and proclaim myself a hero.
He deserved getting hit with his own spell, first of all, because of all the fraud he did with the books, and then with this, like, planning to leave them down there, like you said, like, how heartless can you be?
Exactly, he really sucks. Harry walks on. And then at last, as he crept around yet another bend, he saw a solid wall ahead on which two entwined serpents were carved, their eyes set with great glinting emeralds. Their eyes also looked alive. Harry says, "Open," in Parseltongue. The serpents parted as the wall cracked open, the halves slid smoothly out of sight, and Harry, shaking from head to foot, walked inside. Now he's in the Chamber of Secrets.
At this point, being Harry, after all he's experienced this school year, I don't really know what I'd expect. Like, Harry doesn't seem terrified or anything. He just confidently marches through those doors into the chamber, not knowing what he's about to face. And I think that shows, like, his Gryffindor here, because he's so brave. He's like, I'm gonna save Ginny. Whatever's down here, the basilisk and everything else, like, it's gonna be fine. I got this.
And also, he probably feels like he needs to be confident because this is his best friend's sister's life on the line, and he can't screw up.
And his future wife's.
True that. He was standing at the end of a very long, dimly lit chamber. Towering stone pillars entwined with more carved serpents rose to support a ceiling lost in darkness, casting long black shadows through the odd greenish gloom that filled the place. Wand out, Harry moves forward through the serpentine columns in the silent chamber. In true Scary Movie fashion, his footsteps echo, just in case he keeps his eyes narrowed. The hollow eye sockets of the stone snakes seemed to be following him. More than once, with a jolt of the stomach, he thought he saw one stir. Scary! Then, Harry sees a giant statue against the back wall. Harry describes the face. It was ancient and monkeyish, with a long, thin beard that fell almost to the bottom of the wizard's sweeping stone robes, where two enormous gray feet stood on the smooth chamber floor. And between the feet, face down, lay a small black-robed figure with flaming red hair. Harry sprints to Ginny and gets down on his knees. He drops his wand, grabs her shoulders, and turns her over. Her face was white as marble and as cold, yet her eyes were closed, so she wasn't petrified. Harry assumes she's asleep and shakes her, trying to wake her, but all he manages to do is get her head to lull from side to side. "She won't wake," said a soft voice. Harry jumps and spins around on his knees to face Riddle, who is leaning against the nearest pillar. Riddle, what? I'd be so confused at this point.
Yeah, I'd be like, wait, aren't you the dude who, like, wrote in the diary and showed me that memory? Like, I thought you were from 50 years ago. What are you doing here?
Yeah, it's like, oh, maybe he came down here. Maybe he lives here now. But then again, how did the diary get here? I'd be so confused. But Harry's not. He just sees Riddle's blurry form, and Riddle explains that Ginny is barely alive, and Harry does a double take and asks if Riddle is a ghost. "A memory," said Riddle quietly, "preserved in a diary for 50 years. The diary is sitting open near the statue's toes." The two go back and forth for a little bit, Harry explaining the situation about the basilisk to Riddle and asking for help. Riddle picks Harry's wand up off the floor and won't give it back to Harry. Still not getting what's happening, Harry questions Riddle. "I've waited a long time for this, Harry Potter," said Riddle, "for the chance to see you, to speak to you." Harry's annoyed now. He reminds Riddle again of the danger and tells him they'll talk later. Riddle says he wants to talk now and pockets Harry's wand. Now he's a threat because he took his wand. Red flags are up. So Harry's finally catching on. He asks how Ginny got like this. Riddle explains that Ginny has been writing in the diary for months, telling Riddle about her life and troubles. She poured her soul into the diary, making Riddle stronger. Riddle forced Ginny to kill the roosters, write on the wall in paint, and set the Serpent of Slytherin on Mrs. Norris, Colin, Justin, Hermione, and Penelope, although Ginny didn't remember doing it. Ginny wrote about these memory lapses in the diary, until finally suspecting it, she tried to dispose of it and Harry found it. Riddle says he was anxious to meet Harry and learn about his past, as Ginny had talked to Riddle about Harry. Then, Riddle showed Harry his memory of Hagrid to gain his trust, and Harry realizes it was Riddle who framed Hagrid. Dumbledore was the only one who didn't believe the story, and then convinced Dippet to train Hagrid as gamekeeper. After this incident, Riddle knew it wouldn't be safe to open the chamber again, and left a diary so that he could lead another person to finish Salazar Slytherin's noble work.
Can we just talk about how this whole diary situation is a girl's worst nightmare? She has a crush on Harry, and obviously those are things that she talked about in the diary, poured her heart and soul out. And now, like, Riddle received those thoughts that she had, and now he's telling Harry, and that's, like, a terrible situation.
Yeah, that's super embarrassing. I mean, Ginny's a first year. All she wants to do is fit in the castle, make some friends. And she finds this diary, and this guy was nice to her. So she's like, hey, I'm just going to keep talking to him. And poor naive Ginny gets put into this situation. And she's only 11 years old, and she's dying on the floor.
Moral of the story, don't talk to strangers.
Stranger danger, kids!
The way he said that!
Also, I love how Riddle says Salazar Slytherin's noble work. How the heck is that noble?
Obviously, he has a very different view than the other founders of what's noble and what's not.
Well, I mean, what Riddle considers noble is pretty twisted, which is why he becomes Voldemort. So, there you go. Harry said that the work isn't finished because soon the Mandrake draft will be made and everyone revived. But Riddle says that killing mudbloods doesn't matter to him anymore. Shocker. He's after Harry. Riddle continues his story. Ginny stole the diary back. She panicked that Riddle told Harry her secrets, or even that she was behind everything. Riddle realized that Harry was searching for Slytherin's heir, and that he'd work hard to solve the mystery, especially if one of his friends was attacked. So Riddle made Ginny write her farewell on the wall and come down to the chamber, where Ginny got weaker and Riddle left the pages of the diary. I have been waiting for you to appear since we arrived here. I knew you'd come. I have many questions for you, Harry Potter. Why does he say his full name? That's so creepy.
I know, it's so ominous and weird. And I feel like Riddle's trying to be all proper because he thinks he's superior, you know what I mean?
Exactly. He asked Harry how he escaped with a scar and Voldemort's powers were destroyed. Harry asked why he cares since Voldemort was after his time. Voldemort, said Riddle softly, is my past, present, and future, Harry Potter. He pulled Harry's wand from his pocket and began to trace it through the air, writing three shimmering words, Tom Marvolo Riddle. Then he waved the wand once, and the letters of his name rearranged themselves. I am Lord Voldemort. Oh, look at the anagram!
No. Oh my god. I love it, and it's so funny because, like, Tom Riddle, aka Voldemort, is this dark-ass wizard. And, like, he has it in him to be like, oh wait, let's come up with something creative. Instead of just coming up with a scary name, I'm gonna rearrange the letters of my name and then tell all my friends and see how cool that is. Like, what the heck? That's not cool. That's so nerdy.
And it's lame because you know why it's lame? It forms a full sentence. I am Lord Voldemort. Like, I am Lord Voldemort is a full sentence. It's not even a name. It's like a statement. He's like, look at this statement that I just created. He like mixed his name like letters of alphabet soup and was like, here you go, guys. So he tells Harry how he called himself that to his friends while he was in school. He wasn't going to keep the name of a muggle who abandoned him before he was born because he found out his mother was a witch. From his mother's side, he had the blood of Slytherin running through his veins. I fashioned myself a new name, a name I knew wizards everywhere would one day fear to speak. When I had become the greatest sorcerer in the world. So full of himself.
He and Lockhart could be best friends.
Lockhart would be his wormtail. When Harry's brain had recovered from that bombshell, he replies that Riddle's not the greatest sorcerer in the world. Dumbledore is. And besides, Voldemort never took over Hogwarts. Dumbledore still frightens him. Riddle counters that the memory of him drove Dumbledore out of Hogwarts. But Harry says Dumbledore's not as gone as he might think. They hear eerie, spine-tingling, unearthly music. Fox flies in, drops the sorting hat at Harry's feet, lands on his shoulder, and stops singing. Riddle laughs at this display and about what Dumbledore must have sent Harry before getting down to business, and asking Harry again how he survived both of Voldemort's attempts to kill him. Harry realizes that although he doesn't have much and Riddle has Harry's wand, they need to fight soon. Ginny's life was seeping away and the outline of Riddle was becoming clearer and more solid. Harry decides to answer Riddle, saying that he doesn't know why Voldy lost his powers when he attacked Harry. But Harry does know why Voldy couldn't kill him. Because my mother died to save me. My common, muggle-born mother, he added, shaking with suppressed rage. Riddle says that's a powerful countercharm and that there's nothing special about Harry, but there are similarities between them. So as we talked about earlier, Riddle points out that they're both half-bloods, they're both orphans, they're both raised by muggles, and that they are parcel mouths and look alike. But he says that it's a lucky chance that saved Harry.
Not so fast, Voldy. You don't know what you're talking about.
He's in for a real treat, because then he says, let's match the powers of Lord Voldemort, heir of Salazar Slytherin, against famous Harry Potter, and the best weapons Dumbledore can give him. Wow, he's rude. He's so cocky.
I feel like he'd be like that hot guy in school who thinks he's like all that and all the girls love him, but then underneath he's a total jerk and does drugs and stuff.
Wow, that was real deep. That was real deep right there. That was it, guys. Riddle looks into the stone face of Slytherin. In Parseltongue, Riddle asks Slytherin to speak to him. The statue's mouth opens, forming a huge black hole. He hears something slithering out from inside it. Harry backs up against the chamber wall, shuts his eyes, and Fox takes flight. Something huge hit the stone floor of the chamber. Harry felt it shudder. He knew what was happening. He could sense it, could almost see the giant serpent uncoiling itself from Slytherin's mouth. Then he heard Riddle's hissing voice. Kill him! The basilisk moves towards Harry, and eyes still shut and arms outstretched, he runs. Riddle laughs. Harry trips and falls and hears the snake coming. There was a loud, explosive spitting sound right above him, and then something heavy hit Harry so hard that he was smashed into the wall. Waiting for fangs to sink through his body, he heard more mad hissing, something thrashing wildly off the pillars. Harry opens his eyes and sees that the poisonous green serpent had raised its head in the air, and its head was weaving between the pillars. The basilisk snaps his fangs at Fox, who is soaring around its head. Fox dives and sinks his beak into the snake, who lashes out with its tail, narrowly missing Harry. Before Harry could shut his eyes, it turned. Harry looked straight into its face and saw that its eyes, both its great, bulbous yellow eyes, had been punctured by the phoenix. Blood was streaming to the floor, and the snake was spitting in agony. Go, Fox! He's my favorite.
I know, and I love how Voldemort was laughing about him and saying, like, oh, look what Dumbledore sent his greatest defender, blah, blah. And literally, Tom Riddle's not doing anything. He's literally standing there and having the snake do his bidding, and then the phoenix straight up punctures his eyes, and now Tom's like, oh, well, that plan failed.
Yeah, because this gives Harry an opening now. Fox is like, you were nice to Dumbledore, so I'm being nice to you.
I love Fox.
Me too. Riddle screams no and tells the snake to leave the bird and kill Harry. Still, the snake swayed, and Fox flew around its head, singing and jabbing it in the nose. Harry mutters, asking for help. The snake's tail whips across the floor, throwing the sorting hat into Harry's arms. Harry puts it on, throwing himself onto the floor as the tail swings over him again. So he asks for help, and the snake actually helps him. That's hilarious. Closing his eyes, Harry thinks hard and asks for help. Instead of an answering voice, the hat contracts and something hard and heavy falls on top of Harry's head, almost knocking him out. Stars winking in front of his eyes, he grabbed the top of the hat to pull it off and felt something long and hard beneath it. A gleaming silver sword had appeared inside the hat, its handle glittering with rubies the size of eggs. I love how the sword almost knocks him out, because he puts the hat on his head, he's like, help, help, and the sword hits him, and he's like, oh, I'm gonna pass out now.
This is so cool because now we see that it's possible for the sorting hat to present the sword of Gryffindor to a worthy Gryffindor, and it shows that the hat can do more than just sing songs and sort people and have conversations with the students while it's on their heads. So I think this is really cool. And also the sword looks really pretty.
Yeah, the sword is in Gryffindor colors, and I find it funny how he doesn't pull it out of the hat, it falls on him. Like, that's the best part of the scene. The hat is a boss. I love the hat. Riddle is still yelling at the snake to kill Harry. Harry stands and the basilisk twists to face him. Harry dodges its first two lunge attempts, although the second time its tongue lashes Harry's side. Harry raises the sword. When the basilisk lunges for the third time, Harry drives the sword into the roof of its mouth. But as warm blood drenched Harry's arms, he felt a searing pain just above his elbow. One long, poisonous fang was sinking deeper and deeper into his arm, and it splintered as the basilisk keeled over sideways and fell, twitching, to the floor. So the basilisk is dead, but so is Harry. Harry slides down the wall. He removes the fang from his arm. Fox lays his head on Harry and cries, Riddle gloating that Harry's as good as dead, and the bird knows it too.
I love that part. It's so great. He's such an idiot.
I know, and you'll see why in just a second. While Riddle prattles on about his victory, Harry comes too. A pearly patch of tears was shining all around the wound, except that there was no wound. Riddle tells Fox to get away and points Harry's wand at him. There's a bang like a gun and Fox flies away. Too late, Riddle realizes that the phoenix tears had healed Harry, which is why he's still there. Well, it turns out Dumbledore gave him some pretty good weapons.
Right.
Looks can be deceiving, Tom Riddle. No matter, Riddle raises the wand. Fox flies back to Harry and drops the diary into his lap. Both Harry and Riddle stare at the diary. Harry seizes the fang next to him and plunges it into the book. There was a long, dreadful, piercing scream. Ink spurted out of the diary in torrents, streaming over Harry's hands, flooding the floor. Riddle was writhing and twisting, screaming and flailing, and then he had gone. Harry's wand drops to the floor. The venom burned a hole right through the diary. How cool is that? Harry realizes that the diary is Riddle's anchor, and without it, he can't survive. So he plunges this fang into it because it's poisonous, which he already figured out because it almost killed him, and he's like, oh, maybe this will work on Riddle, and it does.
I also think it's really interesting here, too, looking at the diary as a Horcrux, because I'm wondering if Harry got some kind of vibe, like, there's something with it to kill it with the fang. And also Fox, too, like, Fox dropped that in Harry's lap. Did Fox know somehow, like, do phoenixes have, like, a special kind of intelligence where it kind of senses the dark magic with the diary?
I don't know. I mean, if their tears have healing powers, they have some medical abilities, so he probably sensed something.
That's so cool. I love Fox.
Harry gathers up his wand, the hat, and the sword. Ginny stirs and cries. She tells Harry that she tried to tell him at breakfast, but couldn't because Percy was there. She says it was her. She didn't mean to do it, but Riddle took her over. She says the last thing she remembers is Riddle coming out of the diary. Harry shows her the destroyed book and tells her that Riddle and the snake are finished. As he helps her up, Ginny worries that she's going to be expelled and wonders what her parents will say. Fox waits for them at the entrance of the chamber, and they head back down the tunnel. They meet up with Ron, who made a sizable gap in the rock fall, and go through. The group walk up to the mouth of the pipe. Lockhart is sitting there, humming to himself. Ron explains that Lockhart's charm backfired on him, and he has no idea who or where he is and who they are. Lockhart looks up at them, says hello, and asks if they live here. That's my favorite part! Do you live here? Look around, idiot! And Ron, being Ron, just says no. Just when they wonder how they'll get out of the chamber, Fox flies up and waves his golden tail feathers. Ron realizes that the bird wants them to hold onto him so he can pull them up. Harry grabs Fox's feathers. Ron grabs onto Harry's robes. Ginny holds Ron's hand, and Lockhart holds Ginny's other one. An extraordinary lightness seemed to spread through his whole body, and the next second, in a rush of wings, they were flying upward through the pipe.
I just see the part in the movie where Lockhart's like, "Whoa, this is just like magic. What do you think it is, loser?"
Exactly, and they say it in the book too, which makes me so happy. Once they hit the floor of Myrtle's bathroom, the sink slides back into place. Myrtle goggles at them, surprised they are alive, and tells Harry that if he had died, he was more than welcome to share her toilet. She was hoping that he'd stay with her forever as a ghost.
So basically, Myrtle had a huge crush on Harry, and they were supposed to live happily ever after in the toilet.
In a girl's bathroom.
Right.
Finally, Fox leads them straight to McGonagall's office, where everyone talks about what had happened.
Harry's the chosen one, as we find out with the whole prophecy thing, but I feel like we see that throughout the whole series because Harry's the only one who could have done this because he was able to speak Parseltongue. So I think it's cool how Harry's bravery and determination to solve the mystery and go down there and help Ginny allowed him to be triumphant, because if he wasn't that brave character, it wouldn't have been resolved because nobody else could have spoken Parseltongue to get down there.
Exactly, and in a way, Harry seems real helpless because he has to depend on the Sorting Hat and Fox. But if you think about it, he's a 12-year-old boy, and he doesn't know what to do, and the guy took his wand. I mean, how would you feel down there? I'd be so happy that someone was able to aid me. And it's not like Dumbledore came down there and fixed the situation for him. He sent him the tools that he needed.
Yeah, I know, and I'm just thinking now that it's really interesting how the Basilisk is only able to be controlled by the Heir of Slytherin. So even though Harry can speak to snakes, he wouldn't have been able to control it. But I kind of would have liked to see him try. Like, I'm curious to see what would have happened if he would have tried to talk to the snake, because we know Harry can speak Parseltongue because of Voldemort's soul in him. So I'm really curious if Harry would have been able to control the Basilisk.
I think he would have been able to because he had Voldemort's soul in him. I also find it interesting that there's a whole Slytherin-Gryffindor comparison throughout this entire book. Like, Slytherins are shown to be evil and Gryffindors are shown to be good and brave, as exemplified by the sword. But there's also a fine line, right? Harry could have been a Slytherin. He could have gone to the dark side, but he didn't. Whereas Voldemort was destined to go to the dark side, and he did. So I think it's interesting how there's a gray area here.
Yeah, there definitely is, and this shows, too, how good triumphs over evil.
This has been such a fun two episodes to record, because Chamber of Secrets is one of my favorite books, and I'm surprised it's not everyone's favorite, so we hope that you have enjoyed the episode and also found a deeper appreciation for this fantastic book.
is definitely in my top 3 too, because of the mystery aspect and also because of all the seeds planted. Like, the diary is the first Horcrux that gets destroyed. And then we learn about Voldemort and Harry's similarities in this book that become clear as the series goes on. So yes, I can see how people don't like it as a standalone book, but during all my rereads, I just fall more and more in love with this book because you pick up on so many more things.
Exactly. The Polyjuice Potion is introduced. Expelliarmus is introduced, which is Harry's signature spell. The memory in the diary is like the Pensieve, so it's a really great book. Thank you guys so much for listening. We have a question for you though. What part in this book scared you the most? I think for me, it would definitely be going down into the chamber and seeing Riddle there and all of his threats, and then him telling Harry he's Voldemort. What about you, Demi?
That one is a close tie with the whole Aragog thing in the forest. So I don't know which one I'd be more afraid of. They're both really scary. So now that the terrors of the Chamber of Secrets are gone and the chamber is officially closed, our next episode comes out on November 27th. So stay tuned for that.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this chapter of The Half-Blood Princesses, a Harry Potter podcast.
Hedwig's theme and Leaving Hogwarts in this episode were originally composed by John Williams and arranged by me. Until next time, mark this page with a magical bookmark.